Hello, and welcome to another episode of Study of X. I am your host, Tim, and with me, as always, is the best sharpshooter, skeet shooter, this side of the equator, Sergio.
Hi. God, you just reminded me of some character from Voltes 5, which is a great show. I'm so tired. I'm bringing bonus episode energy to this episode. That just means I'm exhausted.
I mean, if you're not sleep deprived, we're just doing it wrong. And the voted the third best referee in the NHL 3 years running, Chris.
It's true. I don't understand the sport, but for some reason my name keeps coming up every time there's a vote, and I keep getting third place. Can someone please tell them to stop?
It's weirdly consistent.
It is. And I don't know why. I'm very confused about it.
But a little bit of a bonus episode this week. Not technically a crack of a book, although I feel like it almost can be. We're talking about all four issues of X-Men / Fantastic Four this week.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it should be a Krakoa book, especially with what it's covering, and kind of gives more of a view of how other superheroes look at Krakoa and mutants. But hey, I'm not in charge of Marvel. I don't make those choices.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot in this mini where it's very clear Chip Zdarsky was not with the rest of the writing room. But We'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I would.
It kind of fits in there. And it has many of the trappings that you would expect from a Krakoa book.
Yeah.
So it does definitely feel like it's in line with what we've read so far.
I definitely think there was an attempt to match the energy. I just feel there's a couple of characters that I feel like aren't really matching up to their Krakoa counterparts. Mm-hmm. Beast, mainly, actually.
Ooh, yeah, for sure, Beast. But as a trade-off, we do get data pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are data pages in there. Lots of Krakoa and stuff. There's the X everywhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like how the four is kind of in the same style as the X here. Like, it's got, the little line down the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good vibes all around. Really good, layout for design for everything. But before we really start jumping into these, Sergio, I did want to ask you, what is your knowledge of the Fantastic Four?
I think we might have talked about this in the first episode, but refresh us.
We might have. I don't remember if I've ever seen any of the movies, all the way through. Is there a TV show? I feel like I've seen some animated thing with them. Again, I know the main characters, the four main characters. I know their powers. I know that they... I think I may have the movie origin story in my head, but they were involved in some scientific experiment in space, and they got their powers from some thing.
Yeah. They went to space and got hit by cosmic rays and got powers from that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they've got big family energy. They're a family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing about Fantastic Four that I think is appealing to a lot of people. It's a very close-knit kind of family-type group.
Yeah.
Yeah, very different.
They've got a tower. They've got a tower.
Yeah.
They do. They have a tower. Sometimes they have a house. Sometimes it's...
I believe currently in Marvel canon, as of this comic, they were not in the tower. I think they were at some house on Yancey Street or whatever, but close enough. That usually they do have a tower.
Mm-hmm. So, but okay, yeah, you do know the basics, and yeah, a big thing is it's family energy that they have going here, where everybody's very close to each other. And that's, I think, one of the biggest takeaways from this mini, this four-issue mini, is what your found family means against your, birth family, and how that stands against each other sometimes. Whether it's, deserved or not is up for debate, but, we'll get there as we dive into this.
Yeah.
So, to start off, just taking a look at my notes here. The only thing I have to add to this mini before we, dive into it, is this was announced back in 2019 in October, that this mini was going to happen. And I looked for a couple of interviews with Chip Zdarsky. There was one on Newsarama, which is now Games Radar. So the only way to actually find this interview is if you go on the Wayback Machine, which is a bit frustrating. But the big takeaway from that one is Chip says that he really wanted to focus on quiet family moments and giant explosive moments. So with the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, especially with Krakoa right now, they're about family that you have and the family that you choose. So that's specifically a concept he's trying to play with here, and I do think it comes across.
Well,
yeah, I can see that.
I'm questioning if Chip's even his real name.
I too question if Chip is his real name, because Wikipedia told me it's not. And I always thought it was. But it's a really cool pen name. So.
It is a cool pen name. It's cool sounding, I agree.
So, but okay. Bonus energy, you know, that's what we're going for here. But we're going to jump into number one. This is X-Men plus Fantastic Four number one, The Impossible Boy, The World Has Changed. This is written by Chip Zdarsky and was released back in February of 2020. And we're opening up here, actually, with a breakdown of the X-Men side and the Fantastic Four side, which I think gives you a pretty good look as to what the groups are going to be this time. Because for the X-Men, it's feared and hated, and for the Fantastic Four, it is four fearless friends.
Yeah, we've got these summary pages. Are they also a Krakoa staple, or are they like, is it common to find these sort of summary pages in comic books in particular, or Marvel runs?
Yeah, so pretty much every Marvel comic is going to have a page like this.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, the Krakoa ones have that very specific style that we've kind of gotten used to. But yeah, so that is one of the things where this book is going to differ quite a bit, is these aren't really consistent with the rest of the Krakoa books, but yeah.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool. I hadn't really thought about it, but I think this does make it more approachable for people like me who doesn't really have a history with like comic reading or Marvel stuff, that I can probably pick up a book and I've got a quick recap, a rundown of the main characters that are going to show up.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I like the little like, especially in team books like this, I think it's very helpful when they just like put like, here are the characters it's going to focus on. Here are their names, so you don't like, you know, have to keep like looking up like who this is. I do think it's pretty helpful. I agree. It's like a little previously on recap in front of a TV show.
Yeah, I agree. It is really, really nice. Especially as we're going to keep going, because I believe it does start to add in, hey, this is what happened last time.
Yeah.
So, but to start out here, we do have a bit of a previously on, as Franklin is going to narrate a bit of his life here. And Franklin and his sister Valeria? They haven't made their way to Fantastic Four movies or shows or anything. They've kind of been just stuck to the comics. So Sergio, I'm curious if you've ever heard of either.
I haven't. No, I actually thought these first pages were really helpful. I did not realize, there's a lot about Franklin here. I didn't realize Valeria was a thing until like some pages later, but yeah, good enough.
Yeah. So
maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention. Is Valeria mentioned here?
She's one of the characters that's mentioned in the little page there, but she's not really mentioned in this recap, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so they're kind of interesting characters because traditionally they've been written a lot younger than they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big weird universe reset some years ago where Franklin and Valeria got aged up. So now they're teenagers, more or less. Valeria's whole thing is she's just really, really, really smart, while Franklin is a very powerful mutant.
Yes. And for Valeria, one of her fun things is her dad is usually considered the smartest person in the Marvel universe, at least on Earth. It's either him or Bruce Banner. But Valeria can challenge that. She might actually be the smartest person on Earth. It kind of depends on what she's doing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a very smart, typically 3-year-old, but yeah.
Yes, Yes, and while I was looking stuff up for this, I guess it's a running joke in universe that their ages kind of don't make any sense, because they were both introduced in the 80s, roughly, and they haven't totally aged properly as time goes on.
Yeah, but that's just Marvel.
Yeah, it is also just Marvel, but I do think it's kind of funny. So, but we are jumping right over to Krakoa as Kate and Storm reach the island, and after talking to a couple of other folks, Kate is called away to talk to Xavier and Magneto.
Quentin gets dunked on here, which I think is very funny. I just wanted to note that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, they are concerned because Franklin's powers are draining.
Yes. His powers, just to catch some folks up on how it works, and for Sergio, it is described at the beginning that he has the power to create universes. This is pretty much, I mean, it is what it is. It's not like, oh, he can create a bit of a universe and then it goes away. No, he rebuilt the multiverse after it mostly collapsed at one point in the Marvel Comics universe. So he can just create reality as ever he wants it.
So does he's creating a universe like his only power? Like, is that the only thing he can do? Or does that imply, is that just an example to show how powerful he is and he's got a lot of like reality bending stuff?
Yeah, I think it's just general reality manipulation.
Yeah, because on its face, having the power to create universes is impressive, but I don't know how it's practical. But if it's shown to be, oh, he can create universes, and that's just one example of the kind of power that he has and the sort of stuff that he can do if he like puts some effort into it.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of one of those can do whatever he wants type mutants, but again, having trouble with it at the moment.
Yeah, and this is a recent development.
Yes, it was recent to the most recent Fantastic Four run, which I think it started back in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is newer. So, but you also have him, you know, Franklin, being the strongest Omega-level mutant that there is. Creating realities is really strong for Krakoa to have, so it makes sense that Xavier and Magneto here are tasking Kate with, hey, win him over so you could bring him to the island so we can have him here.
Yeah, and also, like, let's make sure his powers don't run out. That will be very nice to have.
Yeah.
I think their strategy here is all over the place because they are going to send Kate because she has some history with Franklin. But then they send this whole party that's going to try, like, strong arm the family anyway.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mess. Like, if they wanted just to do this Kate thing, they should have just only done Kate because that's...
Yeah,
that's a lot. Again, there is history there. They kind of touch on this briefly, but in like an X-Men versus Fantastic Four mini that they had back in the 80s, Franklin was one of the people. It kind of dealt with healing Kitty specifically after she became intangible during the mutant massacre, and Franklin was one of the people that was just kind of like by her side the whole time and just like really helped her through it. So yeah, they're good friends.
Yeah, some self-sabotage going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would argue there's a good amount of that on both sides, because we are going to see it with the Fantastic Four also. But yeah, mutants don't come out on this on a good foot. And it's pretty bad, because it's going to escalate really fast.
Yeah, we'll get into it. I think there is a lot of, y'all should really just kind of talk and not throw hands.
Yes.
Yeah, there. I think we're already there. I would argue, you know, we can move on to these are very obstinate groups of people that kind of remind me of like 90s movies where there are misunderstandings that could just be talked through.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of this, we're gonna get that very both sides apologizing kind of resolution that we would expect from that sort of like story. That I think it works. It's a little corny. I think it's a little telegraphed. But yeah, for now they're in the we're obstinate. We're not seeing each other's points or listening to them at all. pace of the story, and it's a little frustrating because, you know, all of these characters can do better. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's a...
They kind of get into a fight, and then Kate whisks Franklin away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... There's a character specifically I think doesn't handle it very well and is the step in the wrong direction. But we're going to get to her pretty quickly. So, you know, Kate agrees to do this. And she goes off, she runs into Wolverine briefly, and he just reminds her that, hey, when you find out you're a mutant, you kind of grow up really fast. And, you know, Franklin is also going through that, despite being, you know, the son of the Fantastic Four. So, but we are going to cut over to them on 4 Yancey Street, the home of the Fantastic Four. As Reed Richards is trying to figure out what's wrong with his son and simply can't figure it out. And Franklin isn't happy about this, both in the way as a teenager and just, you know, my dad is the smartest person in the world and can't figure out what's wrong with me.
Yeah, they end up doing this a bit later, but I do like that they draw a parallel to kind of Ben Grimm here, because it is a very similar situation where smartest person in the world can't quite figure this thing out. And this is something like directly related to him.
Yeah, this is one of the points I do really like in this series is Franklin telling Ben directly, like, hey, what if Dad's doing this not on purpose, but subconsciously? What if he could actually fix us, but there's something in his brain that's just stopping him from doing so? You know, there's that level of doubt and fear, I think, that's coming from Franklin for this. Ben, thankfully, does shut it down. You know, he trusts Reed more than anything. But you can see it come through, and it kind of helps explain what Franklin is going to do as this goes on.
Yeah, and it's also something where I believe, I haven't read many Fantastic Four, like, older comics, but I believe this is something that Ben grapples with quite a bit, was thinking, like, maybe Reed is doing this on purpose, or maybe like Reed could figure this out and just isn't. There is a data page here I just kind of want to talk about real quick because it is just peak comic science.
Oh, I love it. Do you want to explain what God power is, or do you want me to?
I don't think we need to go into too much detail. It's apparently the theoretical source that all superheroes draw their powers from is God power. And Franklin maybe he's cut off from it, and that's why he can't get power anymore.
Yeah, that's an easy enough explanation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you needed a somewhat of an explanation why he can't use his powers. Here is one.
Yeah, God power.
We'll get a better name for this later on.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. yeah, so some doctor apparently theorized this, but yeah, so, moving on.
I would say, though, if I could, dive into superhuman research as a doctorate, that would be sick. I also would be doing what this doctor is doing and trying to figure out how all of these powers work.
Yeah. So why did Xavier and Magneto bring the entire Marauders team with them?
Marauders plus Wolverine? I don't know. Because they all just show up outside of the Fantastic Four's home, and that doesn't send a good message. Especially when you have someone like Pyro there, who is
that's kind of my whole thing. Like, some of these people, like, yeah, sure, whatever, bring Storm or Iceman, but you brought Pyro, who is, like, you know, relatively chill now, but, like, mainly known for being a villain. Like,
known for burning people alive.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Bishop's here. Sure. You know, he's just kind of there.
I wouldn't have brought Bishop personally. Again,
you could argue they sent a better team than the one they sent into the mother mold.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You are absolutely correct. they don't have a good history of this. And, oh boy, I mean, so one of the characters I do have a problem with in this story is Sue Storm. She immediately, as this Marauders team and Xavier and Magneto show up, has an invisible bubble around the entrance of her home to keep them away. And once Xavier and Magneto show up, she's like, no, you are not going to take my son. I'm not going to let you do this. And this is where the argument starts to get out of hand.
Everyone goes into this, like, already heated, except for Kate and Franklin. It also seems like the greater Marvel Universe has not gotten the memo about Kate's name change. A lot of people just calling her Kitty.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a bit of stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of people call her Kitty, even though she doesn't want to. Pyro is lacking his face tattoo, which is a bummer, because I think that would have been even funnier if he showed up with the skull on his face.
Yeah.
So, but Magneto, being as dramatic as he is telling them that they're here for Birthright. Reed is all about, hey, you're not going to take my son? That's not okay. And they end up going into the Fantastic Four's house and start to have the argument that Krakoa is for all mutants. Franklin's a mutant. He should be there. And the Fantastic Four side of it is very much a, well, you have villains on the island, you're cutting people off, and we don't really know what you're doing, so no.
Yeah. Things break down rather quickly. Magneto ends up in an invisible ball, and all hell breaks loose. And that's Kitty's cue to get out.
Yeah. She gets Franklin, and they both leave as the adults just keep fighting. Which, I don't blame them, and Kitty's going to have a point here as she takes Franklin out, and Franklin kind of, not reminisces, but he starts talking about how, hey, I really want my powers fixed, but nobody's listening to me, and I don't really know what to do. This is a little bit also of a coming-of-age story, just a tiny bit, but they both have a point that nobody is actually asking Franklin what he wants to do. Everybody is acting for him, but not with him.
Yeah, and like honestly, I think this is kind of towards Sergio's point about this being self-sabotage, because Kate would have convinced Franklin just to come. Like, mm-hmm. she very clearly just knows how to talk to this kid like he's a kid.
Yeah.
And, like, he wants it, too, so, like, he would come, but instead we bring two teams of superpowered mutants and end up in a fight.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they really undermine their own plan.
Yeah. Like, this was a good plan. Why did you do this?
Like, yeah, why did you have to somehow do a power move on top of the move you were doing? So, but we're going to get to that fight. I do like this really brief talk here between Storm and Ben. Where Storm is like, hey, this is a good idea. You know, mutants are hated and feared. Millions of us get killed all the time. That's why he should come to the island where he's safe. And then Ben fires back with no, like, holding back and is like, oh, you mean the island that's probably going to be the second mass murder of the mutants? That island?
Yeah.
And dude needs to chill just a little bit. So, but yeah. Kate takes Franklin to the gates, and he is deciding, like, hey, you know what, maybe I will go through it, when the Human Torch shows up and immediately accuses Kate of kidnapping Franklin, which the Marauders don't take very kindly, and this immediately breaks down into a fight between the Fantastic Four and the mutants.
Yeah, they escalate to a pretty insane degree. Magneto throwing cars around probably isn't a good case for this diplomatic immunity thing. I do like how this is basically in the same location that they were in House of X 1.
I also really like that. It's really nice. I also want to note, this is count number one of Wolverine getting bounced away by somebody. It's going to happen at least 4 or 5 times, and it's funny every time to watch him just, like, ragdoll away.
Yeah, it's a nice looking fight scene here.
So, but they do fight, and Xavier is trying to calm them down, you know, saying this is what's going to happen, you can let him choose. While off to the side, Kate's like, well, pick for yourself, Franklin, what are you going to do? And Franklin books it towards the gate, only to run straight through it and not go through it and teleport to Krakoa. There's a moment of confusion, before Reed lets the mask slip a little bit and says that he created a device that will mask his son's mutant gene, meaning to the gate, he is not a mutant and therefore cannot go through it.
Yeah, Franklin doesn't take this well.
As he rightfully should. Because what Reed does here is really messed up and is very much not okay. All the mutants agree with this, that it has crossed a line, but they also understand that they just won the argument because Reed just turned his son against him.
Yeah, like, they don't gotta worry about this. Franklin will show up.
Yeah, he could have just shut up. He could have gone, oh, weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonder how that happened.
Yeah, it felt like honesty just, like, really got the better of him here, but yeah, it's...
This is so extremely by the numbers, again.
Yeah.
Parental overattachment story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like this because I always really like when mutants are contrasted with other superheroes in the Marvel Universe, because it is a good point that, hey, people do like the Fantastic Four. You know, there's not people out in the streets calling for the Fantastic Four to be murdered just because of who they are. Whereas with mutants, just because that they were born that way, suddenly you have Orcus or you have people making the Sentinels and so on and so forth. And I think watching that contrast and seeing it always brought up and played out is really fun. I really like it. But I also agree that things escalated here for the sake of escalation, not so much through logical story beats.
Yeah, and even just, like, without, like, the superhero things on it, it's very much, like, just the overprotective kid doesn't want to let the kid leave the nest. Or the overprotective parent doesn't want to let the kid leave the nest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is a different place for him that's not with the rest of the family, and they don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have more on that, but I think once we go deeper in, I'll bring it up. But it is a story that kind of resonates a little bit with what the X-Men stand for, I think.
Yeah.
It just feels like they fall into the genre trappings too easily to me.
Yeah, it's very much like, oh yeah, this is what this story is, huh? But I like what they do with it here. The next scene is a scene with his sister. I am not gonna lie, I've been pronouncing this Valerie the whole time. What is her name?
It's Valeria.
Valeria, okay.
Yeah, that's or just most people end up calling her Val, which I will probably default to.
But I like this little relationship thing here. I feel like it shows it very well. I like Val solving a spherical Rubik's Cube during this conversation as well. But I enjoy that she's just Team Franklin here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, hey, ignore dad. That's what parents are for. Just ignore him and do what you want.
Yeah, and also just like, hey, that was messed up. Like, they shouldn't have done that to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, finally someone, you know, commiserates with him a bit.
Yeah.
So, and then we get the fun run here of Ben telling Reed that, hey, you fucked up with your kid, like, really badly. By the way, here's your wife who's going to tell you the same thing. I'm going to leave now.
Yeah. And meanwhile, on a Marauder's mission, as they're on a boat rescuing some mutants, they find Franklin and Val, who have stowed away.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And there is, you know, a hint at some of the conflict that's going to come up, because Val isn't a mutant, but Franklin is, which is brought up here. But kind of not the most important thing at the moment, because the Marauder's crew was looking for some mutants that were stranded in the ocean. And as they are doing so, suddenly they are attacked by the best character in this entire mini as Dr. Doom appears.
Yeah.
Magneto getting out Magnetoed by Dr. Doom this comic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, they went to the same school of drama together, but Dr. Doom just kind of was like, he excelled at it. While Magneto did good, he was not a Dr. Doom.
What do you know about Dr. Doom, Sergio?
Close to nothing. I do know that he's like the emblematic Fantastic Four antagonist.
Yeah.
And I do know that he has he's very close to Reed. Like, I don't know if it's familial, if it's a familial relationship, or if it's just they work together, or where, you know, friendly rivals or co-workers at some point. But that's what I know.
Yeah, so Doom is interesting. He is definitely like the Fantastic Four villain, but isn't always just openly hostile. One of the things that he is very much obsessed with is proving that he is a better like person than Reed. Like, he wants to be smarter. He wants to be able to find the solutions he can't. But also is just evil. He is currently a monarch, in charge of his own country, just somewhere in Europe. I don't remember where Latveria is.
It's vague Europe near Romania, kind of.
Yeah, it's like Eastern Europe. But yeah, Doom's a lot. A running thing with Doom is a lot of times you'll think you're talking to the real Doom, and it's actually a robot. But yeah, so that's our first issue. Should we go to the second?
Yeah, I am ready to jump into the second one. For the second issue of this, it is called The Time Is Now, and was also released in February of 2020, towards the end of it. And we are going to open up here as Cyclops is informing the Fantastic Four that no, they did not kidnap Franklin, nor did they kidnap Valeria, because, well, Valeria's not welcome on Krakoa anyway.
Yeah, Sue, not a fan of that answer.
you know what, Scott? I think you could have said that a lot better. I do think, you know, again, I feel like Sue Storm is escalating this faster than I think she should. But she is right to question, what do you mean one of my children is more important than the other? Just because one is a mutant, one is not. Which is, again, another side effect of Krakoa and mutant supremacy, is they're always going to be positioning themselves as more important than humans, even if they don't necessarily intend it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Sue is my least liked character in this run. I think she's very reactionary in a way that Reed reads a little more nuanced in his views, or at least the focus of the over-attachment from the parent is on Reed, while Sue is just there to either back him up or be extremely reactionary. I think she could have seen what Cyclops' views were instead of reacting like she did.
Yeah, I think she could have.
She's the one who suggests he means that one's better than the other, when all he means is, you know, the valid point of why would we have kidnapped your daughter? We're not interested in her.
Yeah.
That's not what we came to talk about earlier.
Yeah, and it's like just like this absolute, like, it's a valid point, and she completely just kind of, like, just blacked out on it. Like,
I think it is a valid point, but she deploys it in the wrong moment.
Yeah.
And she's like, you think my daughter isn't good enough to kidnap as well?
Yeah.
Which is a little silly.
And it's just like, yes, you're right. Like, they don't. But also, like, so the logical conclusion to that is that they didn't take Val. And it's like she didn't quite get there. And I feel like she's smarter than that. It's your kids are missing. You're probably not thinking too clearly, but like there was a lot of steps to get to the next point that we get to with her in the issue, where I feel like we could have just like thought about it before we invaded a country.
Yes. Yeah. That could be, you know, the quote on the back of the cover is maybe we could have thought about it a little bit more since before we started a, international incident.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the problem with a lot of the over conflict, where I think I like the Kate and Franklin stuff a lot, but I think the broader over conflict between like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four is a lot of people just kind of talking past each other.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's also so much to a point where it feels intentional by Zdarsky to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, possibly even working on, you know, the story concept of, you know, the kids are getting along and figuring things out, but the adults aren't listening. That's almost what it feels like a bit here.
Yeah. And again, that's kind of just how the rest of this goes. Sue's just like, you've heard them. They're harboring villains. We gotta go get our children.
Mm-hmm. It's
like, okay. Blech.
Yeah. Or the small, you know, snipe she's going to do where, you know, hey, Reed, we are a democracy here, unlike Krakoa, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like, eh.
Yeah, it's like, that's not really needed.
Yeah.
Sue, maybe chill. So, but, you know, that's all we need to know for now is they are going to go get the kids back, even though Reed says maybe let's chill out. But back in the ocean, the Marauders are pretty easily defeated by Dr. Doom here. And we don't see the actual fight as Kate is knocked out first. And as she blacks out, we skip the fight to where she is reawoken on perhaps one of my favorite places called Doom Island.
Speaking of Doom, should we talk about Doom and Val's relationship real quick?
Please. My favorite relationship is those two.
So what is their relation? Is like Doom is somehow her godfather or something to that effect?
Val's origins get very comic booky. In fact, I can post the image on our social media of her first appearances, because her first appearance is in May of 1983, where she was conceived. March 1984, she was miscarried. And then in April 2002, she was resurrected. So that gives you a good idea of the weird comic book stuff that goes on with her.
Yeah,
but to summarize,
oh boy,
yeah.
To summarize her weird origin, all you really need to know is when Sue gave birth to Franklin, because she was hit by the cosmic rays, her having to give birth almost killed both of them, and Reed was able to find a solution. When Valerie was going to be born,
see, now you're saying it.
I am saying it. Damn it. Okay. When Val was going to be born, Reed was indisposed and nobody else could figure out what to do. So the Human Torch went to Dr. Doom and said, "Can you save my sister?" And he said, "Yes." So for Val, that's why she calls Doom Uncle Doom, because he basically made sure that she is alive at this point. So they're not actually familial related. But she does it almost as kind of a dig, but also in a, you know, respectful kind of way.
Yeah, and I think, like, Doom, like, unlike the rest of the Fantastic Four, because of this, Doom treats her very well. And, yeah, Doom's a fan of this girl.
Absolutely. I think it also helps that he really likes this, because it's just one thing he has under his belt is like, ha, Reed, you couldn't save your daughter, but I sure could.
Yeah, it's very Doom. Like, he saved his daughter and, like, treats her like his own daughter, basically, as a dig on Reed.
I really like their relationship. I really like Val in general.
Yeah.
I think she's over all of this in a way that I really like.
Yeah, she's just here for the ride and just kind of sees through all this thing. It's good stuff.
Uh-huh. It's like she's read the script to the movie and she already knows how it's going to end.
Yeah.
So she's just along for the ride. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's fun. I love their relationship together. I want to say, I could be incorrect here, their relationship like this really took off when Hickman was writing the Fantastic Four, which kind of is what led to Franklin rebuilding the multiverse at one point. But I remember Val's and Doom's relationship really being a big point of that whole entire story.
Oh. Yeah.
So, but we do learn here that Doom has this island out here in the ocean that he has masked and cloaked. And he has decided to move all of his genetically powered citizens of Latveria here for the inevitable war of power that is going to come now that Krakoa is a nation.
I absolutely love the design of this, by the way. They're sitting at what appears to be just some kind of, like, weird tiki bar type deal. And the island is tropical, but there is a, like, medieval European-style castle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Doom has a look, and he loves it, and he's gonna bring it with him wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very gaudy, but for several different definitions of gaudy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, just multiple things. Like, and yeah. He's just out here at his little, like, Cabana Beach thing, just drinking a wine glass through his weird metal mask. It's great. Like,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of my favorite things that Doom is going to continue to do is just take shots at Reed whenever he possibly can. Because as he is explaining that, hey, these lost mutants you were looking for were actually on my island, so they're not lost and they don't need you. But yeah. Also, you know, my plan here is to help Franklin Richards, because Reed obviously can't do that, so I'll do it instead.
Yeah, and if I remember right, I think he was the one that ended up helping, attempting to help Kate when the intangible stuff happened in Fantastic Four versus X-Men, specifically to get a one-up on Reed. So this is almost a callback to that.
Yes, it was. Another thing of where he's like, oh, he can't do it. Okay, I'll do it instead. Which does come into play later because Doom is going to use Kate's abilities against her because of his time helping her out. But before we get to that, we have another data page. And this time it's on the mutant population.
Yeah, pretty easy explanation here. It just shows the mutants that are on Krakoa, which is a ton. The mutants that aren't off Krakoa, which is not very many anymore, and then like the Omega level mutant population, which is about 50. Very small compared to everyone else.
It is an itty bitty select group of people. You know, we had that original list back in House and Powers of X that listed all the Omega level mutants that we knew of, and it's a tiny list. There's not very many, which would explain again why Xavier and Magneto really want Franklin.
And also it's Reed's kind of way of saying like, hey, putting all of these on an island together is probably bad. That makes them easy targets. But back at the quiet council,
they have multiple man looking through the Marauder's ship. Far too many of multiple man for a very small ship, but that's okay. And they realize that, okay, they're not there. Where could they be? And they're able to kind of triangulate where the last known mental sighting of the crew was, thanks to Cerebro, and they have a good idea of where to find them. But before they go off and figure this out, Cyclops has a point that he really wants to talk about the Fantastic Four situation. Because, as he says, if my kids were kidnapped, I would move heaven and earth to go find them.
Yeah.
Oh, look, they're here.
Yeah, so they're sitting here just discussing stuff, and they're just like, yeah, I mean, yeah, she's an invisible woman, like, probably could be anywhere. And then they all just kind of look at each other.
Although I do like Nightcrawler kind of coming to that realization as he's talking, and then everyone around him doesn't have to say anything and they just act.
Yeah, like Magneto, it seems like he takes apart part of the chair just to see if he can find the force field or something. It is a neat little sequence, and I like how this was built up. But so the Fantastic Four, who now know they didn't kidnap the children, square up, and we're on to round two of this fight.
Mm-hmm. As Magneto just gets punched by the thing over here, Sue gets immediately knocked out, so they are no longer invisible. But don't worry about it. It's an international incident now, and it's time for the chase.
I really like how the thing opens with, hey, traditionally evil guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big Saturday morning cartoon energy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But we don't get much of the fight, at least not for a couple other pages, as we go back to Doom Island.
Yeah, back on Doom Island, as Kate is not able to use her powers. But don't worry, Doom is not like some sort of sicko that would make species-specific weapons. That is abhorrent.
Yeah, it's just... Any kind of dig on Reed. Like,
just it's there's something about like the pompous self, not self-righteousness, but it's like Doom believes in himself so much that it's almost infectious. It's really, really funny and amusing. Like, nobody else acts like him. Magneto kind of does, but Doom is on a just a different level.
There is, Magneto is someone who's very dramatic, but I believe Magneto has doubted himself before. Doom has not.
No, Doom does not know what the word doubt means. Oh, man, just some of my favorite of this entire issue. Like here, as Val calls out correctly that, yeah, their dad was very invasive and not fair, but not like you, Uncle Doom. And now she basically eggs him on to tell them how he was able to stop Kate's powers. And Doom's like, oh, yes, I did miss you. But anyways, here's how I did it.
Yeah. So, yeah, Doom thinks he can fix him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he was able to fix Kate all those years ago, and he is fairly certain he can do it again here, because, as he says, there is no greater injustice in Doom's mind than wasted potential.
Yeah, I buy it.
I also buy it. there is a touch of honesty to whatever Doom says.
Yeah. Like, so, whatever it is probably going to come back to either helping Doom or helping Doom's ego.
Yes. Yeah. Regardless of what's going to happen, he's going to win either way. But also, I totally believe he's just going to do this because he believes it's the right thing to do, in his view.
Yeah.
So, but we'll get back to that because we are back at the chase again. As the Fantastic Four are trying to get away from the island, but pretty much all mutants that are at the ready are going to try and stop them.
I think it's very funny that they have made it to the shore from the Quiet Council, like, headquarters.
Yes, and were able to do so without getting stopped, because there's no real, like, coherent Krakoa layout, so we don't actually know what it looks like, but that seems a little silly.
It is a little silly.
Also, like, it's an island of mutants.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like,
You have
there's Black... There's like 100,000 of them in there.
Yeah. You have Black Tom somewhere here who could just have the island wake up.
Yeah.
So, but, hey, you know, comic books.
Yeah. So, yeah, they lift the little protective visor that they've made to block out psychics just enough for Emma to get into Sue's head, and then Reed immediately closes it because he's hoping the psychic interference, or like the psychic little burst there would wake her up, which works, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep, a very smart move. Also a really, really good, you know, planting the seed of what could happen if there is a hole in the suit here. And that's going to be used next issue pretty well.
Yeah.
So, but Sue's awake, and she knocks everybody back with a massive invisible bubble.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four run away, and that's the end of the conflict, right? They're yes. Done, right?
This is the silliest flying car.
Yeah, yeah.
ever seen.
It's the Fantastic Car.
Yeah, it's the Fantastic Car. I mean, come on, Sergio.
It's so silly looking.
It's Jetsons.
It's like
energy.
The idea of yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the idea of a futuristic flying car from the 50s.
Yeah.
And there's not a trace of trying to update the design.
No,
it's
no,
just
no,
what it
yeah.
is.
it's great. The Fantastic Four.
It's incredible.
The Fantastic Four have not updated their technology since they were first, you know, created all of those years ago, and I respect it.
Reed had a tarp over this in his garage.
mm-hmm. Always they, planned they, to update it. Never did.
When they threw the tarp off to get the car out, like a layer of dust flew off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Peak. But yeah, so again, the conflict is over, right? Like, we're done, they got away. There's no reason for this to keep going, right?
Right. You know, they're gonna go get their kids, everything's cool, that's that.
Yeah. So yeah, the X-Men decide to pursue them for some reason. I guess they're mad about the whole Krakoa thing, but I feel like at this point you should probably just come to an understanding and let them go.
Yeah.
They know they're probably flying towards the island. or the point where they lost contact with the stowaway, not stowaway, castaway mutants.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's on their way anyway. Might as well shoot down the flying car on their way.
Mm-hmm. In one of the coolest ways possible.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, Xavier's kind of, you know, high on his own supply here, as he's like, you need to explain to the Fantastic Four that this is not a game anymore.
Yeah, just quietly sit down and tell them, hey, you can't invade our country.
Mm-hmm. So, but before we get to that, the Marauders are released from Doom Prison, as Kate tells them that they've made a deal with Dr. Doom. He's going to fix Franklin here as long as they leave Doom Island and its mutants alone.
Yeah. Everyone decides it's a good idea, and then we get Doom working on what looks like a bunch of Doom Sentinels.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As one does.
Yeah.
As one does. You know, very, very Doom of him to do.
We also get a hologram appearance here of Victorious. I think we're just not going to talk about her.
No.
I don't think we got to worry about it.
Nope. We're just going to leave it be that Latveria is good at home. That's okay.
Yeah. It's all chill. All right. Issue 3?
Yeah.
Issue 3?
Issue 3. Issue number 3, Krakoa has been invaded, was released in March of 2020. And we are going to open up here with the mutant ship as they fly and catch up to the Fantastic Four, and Cyclops attaches this really cool helmet that seems to transfer his eye beams to the guns of the ship, and he shoots down the Fantastic car like it's nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
This dogfight is very funny because the X-Men have an actually cool looking black ship.
Yeah, you just had this car.
Uh-huh. It's like hydrogen bomb versus coughing baby meme.
That's exactly it.
But yeah, so they teleport out of the car and we're back to fighting.
Mm-hmm. But this time on Doom Island.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wolverine bounces off a reed again.
Yes. Again.
After Sue makes a teleportation thing. He should really stop trying to attack the rubber man with claws, but...
Also, yo, Wolverine, chill out. Attacking Reed and saying your kids are about to be orphans?
Yeah.
Bro. That's kind of a lot.
I feel like we're a little bit too heated here, everybody. Like,
yeah. Yeah, maybe take a breather just a little bit.
Yeah, so like, especially because it's like Wolverine and Ben are like traditionally friends.
Yeah, so for him to jump in here and just fully ready to murder Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Ooh. It's a good thing that bubble came in time and he just bounced harmlessly away again.
Yeah, it's cool. We good.
So, but as we saw in the last issue, if someone gets a cut in their suit, it seems like Emma can find her way in. And the Human Torch gets a cut in his suit. So Emma is able to take him over and let Sue know that, hey, we're going to have to bring you back to Krakoa for your espionage and illegal entry trial that we're going to hold.
Yeah. Doom says, hey, what are you doing on my island? Magneto flies down, jealous of Doom's cape, and Doom wins that little...
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, Doom being Doom and is like, oh, you think you're trying to move my suit? What do you think I am, an idiot?
Yeah.
I can just move Wolverine. So, but thankfully, the one reasonable person in this entire thing comes back, and Kate comes on the scene with the Marauders and says, hey, look, we made a deal with Doom. Everybody's okay. We can chill out. And immediately, Sue does not chill out because what do you mean Doom made a deal to fix my son?
Yeah, everyone's very questioning of this. The X-Men are as well. Kate says, I made a call. We're going to stand by it. We want this dude with his powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Xavier's like, hey, she did what she had to do. People are safe now. It's a good thing.
Yeah. And they don't really have like a reason to believe Doom's mistreating them, like his mutants yet either. Even he is.
He is Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Traditionally, the citizens of Latveria are not treated the nicest. So, but Doom does have one thing that everybody needs to abide by, is that nobody is allowed to go into the island's town. Everybody can wait here on the beach, probably at the cabana. Just don't go deeper into the island while he's fixing Franklin.
There is a there's a line here from Doom of where he says, "A piece of him is missing. You know how that feels, how that's felt for years. You toss and turn at night, missing that sliver of intelligence that would put you on par with Doom." And it's the most projecting statement I have ever heard. And he delivers it with such sincerity.
Sincerity and venom. Yeah. He hates Reed. His very existence is to hate Reed. I love him so much.
Yeah, he should...
I think I don't know if he's consistent about this, but the third person speak, I think also adds a lot.
Yeah, I really like it. And that's very consistent, by the way. Like, but, yeah, he should really buy a nice screen for that projecting he's doing. But, yeah, so back at the lab.
Mm-hmm. Back at the lab, Val has taken a look at everything, and she feels that Doom isn't trying to kill Franklin at the very least. Yeah. But before they get into it, Reed shows up, and Franklin does finally stand up to him, saying, "No, I'm going to make my own choice, and I do want to get my powers fixed. If Doom can do it, then I'm going to let him do it."
Yeah, Val's very impressed by this.
I love her expression in this panel.
She's just a little gremlin.
Yeah.
She is a very little gremlin, yeah.
Beast offers to also go over the research with Reed. Beast here, I haven't really talked about it yet. We don't get too much of him. But the reason I feel like Beast feels like an older version of Beast here. I don't get the CIA leader vibes from Beast that I feel like we're getting in X-Force.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this probably has to do with the fact that this was announced back in 2019. I imagine by that point they had a first script done. So that was probably still pretty early in Beast becoming more of a CIA guy. So, you know, I can let it slide a little bit for continuity's sake.
Yeah, it's...
I could see this being like a persona he can easily slip into.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I buy that he can do it, but it just feels so odd compared to his X-Force betrayal, where it really feels like I'm looking at a Beast from every other era but the current one. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, a wonderful line from Doom, where he says, "Very well. Doom's work is immaculate. Go over it with your finest tooth comb. Maybe you will learn a thing or two."
Yeah, it's
just
every line this man has.
Every line this man speaks is perfection. I love him. So, but back at the mutant cabana.
Yeah. Everyone says, "Yeah, that deal we made with Doom. We're not doing that. Let's get these mutants out."
Mm-hmm. I don't care what Kate said. We're just gonna do it.
Yeah. We get a little map here of Doom Island. It's an island, all right.
Sure is an island. There's not very many people on it. There's 2,500. That's about it.
Yeah.
So, and now we get our wonderful page of technobabble as Beast and Reed go over what Doom has created here.
Yes, and this is one of my favorite parts of this entire series. Doom goes over... He pretty much proposes the exact same theory Reed has with the God power earlier in issue one, but, you know, gets to the end of the statement and says, "I call them Von Doom particles," and insist on that name when Reed tries to correct him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just great. And even adds to it that, like, hey, once I get there, it will be claimed as Latverias anyway.
Yeah. Like, Reed just, I don't know, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Von Doom Particles is a bad. He's right.
I also fully agree. It's a wonderful name. So, and then we have another moment here that I actually really like, where Xavier asks Doom what he's doing. And this is where Doom kind of opens up a little bit, and he says, yes, I know we have not accepted the mutant deal of medicine, but I do that not because I don't accept Krakoa as a nation. I do. I don't like it that you are trying to put your superiority as mutants over everybody else. He thinks that is disgusting. And it's this, like, it's this very honest moment from him that I wasn't fully expecting. But it also makes sense from his perspective what he's doing. That, you know, Doom is, for all of his dramaticism, he is the leader of a country. He still plays the game of nations that all of the others do, but he's been doing it a lot longer than the mutants have. And he's been successful. You know, Latveria has not disappeared and doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So he sees what this is going to lead to, and he does not like it.
Yeah. He kind of pulls out, like, I don't really agree that you having special powers makes you better than us. Like, that doesn't make... Why does that make you better than humans who are dedicating their life to, like, studying culture? Says they're just insulting. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and he says, I'm gonna do this with power that we earned, not that we were born with.
Mm-hmm. And then Xavier puts on his best pouty face.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in this,
vaguely European town where this lady is selling pineapples?
It's just like a... I don't know how to explain the vibe here. It feels like they wandered into, like, a medieval movie.
Yes. Yeah, like, there's a movie set going on, or a bunch of people are LARPing or something. It's very odd.
Yeah.
So, but they do track down two mutants pretty quickly, and these mutants, once they are mutants, the Krakoa mutants, talk to these Latverian mutants. The Latverian mutants are not for it. They immediately want to go call Doom for help, because they think running is a mistake, because the last ones who tried to run, something bad happened to them.
The way they're dressed, and to your point about them looking like they're LARPing, for a second I thought they were role-playing as Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, it almost looks like that.
Yeah, they could get away with it, really.
So a bunch of Doombots show up after they've almost convinced these mutants to come with them. And a fight breaks out. Wolverine decides to stab one. Just putting it down real quick.
Mm-hmm. And as this fight is happening, we do get a bit of story over to where Beast and Reed both decide that this is safe for Franklin to do if he really wants to. The science is sound. It is now up to him whether he wants to.
Well, Reed doesn't really come to that conclusion, but Beast does. Reed actually states he doesn't think that this is something you should do and it's too risky, and Beast is like, I don't know, it looks fine to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is true. He doesn't necessarily say, you know, the science isn't wrong. Just, it's too dangerous. The danger outweighs the benefits.
Yeah, but then there's a nice little moment here where he says, look, I'm sorry. You're your own man, though. If this is what you want to do, I'll support it.
Mm-hmm. And Franklin still agrees he does want to go through with this.
Yeah.
So, and this is where we find, with the juxtaposition of Wolverine having stabbed this Doombot, to find that it was not, in fact, fully a Doombot, but that there was a Latverian mutant inside that he just killed on Latverian soil. Which Dr. Doom clearly was trying to get to happen, because the second this death occurs, he unleashes his Doom Sentinels.
Yeah, Doom says they just murdered a Latverian, unconscionable, unjustifiable, and, like, a shit-eating grin that you can somehow see through the mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, as he hits this big old red button and summons unforgivable. His sentinels.
I feel bad for this dude that just got killed like this, just, like, absolutely played.
Yeah, no, I feel bad as well.
But yeah, so the Doom Sentinels are up as we go into issue 4. And I believe...
Something...
Sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to shout out the thing doing the shocked Pikachu face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very silly, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, if I remember right, this fourth issue was not released before COVID.
Yes, you would be correct. With the fourth issue here, which is titled The Might of Latveria Has Been Unleashed, wasn't released until the end of July in 2020. So it was a big gap between March to the end of the July.
Yeah. So let's go into it.
Yeah. We open up here with the group that has been figuring out what to do with Franklin kind of realize something's going on as there is a big explosion. I kind of like the scene here because in the back, Beast is looking up and a piece of rubble just like bounces off his forehead and he just doesn't acknowledge it. But Franklin has begun this process to get his powers back. And as everybody looks out the window, Beast runs to help his fellow mutants as he says that Latveria has now declared war on mutants for using their well-known enemy, the Sentinels, against them.
Yeah.
They just take them down.
And also, the timing of this has happened, so they cannot get Franklin out of this procedure while it's in process. So they just gotta let that thing happen.
Yep. Sue and Kate both try and get Franklin out, but aren't able to. Kate is able to phase into this barrier that Dr. Doom has set up, but... like we alluded to earlier, Doom knows Kate's powers better than anyone, probably even Kate, because he is able to make her heavier than a stone, and she ends up falling through the floor. And Tim, I did want to ask you, is this something Kate can do on her own? Do you know if she has had the ability to do that?
I don't think so. If she can, that's probably what she should have tried to get into Krakoa.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, just goes through the floor. So, yeah, everyone's mad, but Doom says you gotta keep going with it. Have fun with those robots.
Mm-hmm. And Sue is called away by Emma, as Emma tells her that, hey, one, there are psychic dampeners on the island. Emma can only do so much. And there are the trapped Latverian mutants in the Doombots flying around. So they have to hold back with their punches, and if they keep doing that, they're going to die.
Yeah. So we get some fun little uses of powers here, where, like, you have Sue, like, able to lift off pieces of the Doombot's armor so Nightcrawler can touch them and teleport them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another fun showing of, like, hey, this is what happens when we work together. We haven't seen combos of powers like that since... House and Powers of X, where that was really a big thing, especially with the Five. And Sue isn't a mutant, but I always like it when we're able to see a combo of powers working in non-traditional ways.
Yeah. We're at the point now where we're all together and we're fighting on the same side.
Mm-hmm. We cut back to Kate for a bit as she essentially talks herself into getting past Doom's control here. As Franklin is not having a great time getting his powers back, as everybody else just essentially has to wait and watch as it happens. So, but Kate is able to use her phasing powers and phase through Doom's suit, which causes it to malfunction long enough to where she can go talk to Franklin and ask him what he wants. And this time he says he wants to go out and help everybody because that is what his mom did. So Kate helps him phase out of this suit that Doom created, and he is able to unleash some of his power here and just absolutely obliterate all of the Doom Sentinels in one go.
What was the actual name of the Doom Sentinels? I remember him saying what it was.
Yes, it is later. It's called the Latviathans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah. Because they throw it out there that he's using the Sentinel designs, and he's like, nah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming up actually pretty quickly, where Doom is like, hey, you attacked my people on my soil. What are you doing? And they're like, you brought out a Sentinel. What do you think we're going to do? And he's like, no, I wouldn't make a crude Sentinel. What do you think I am, Reed? No, I would make Latviathans instead that wouldn't differentiate between mutant and man.
Yeah.
Just absolute king energy over here.
Yeah. So, Franklin is comforted by Sue, but Doom says now he is just he's damaged goods. We can't do anything about this now. His powers are just going to keep draining.
Mm-hmm. And he even ends up threatening Xavier and saying that he will bring this to the international community. But Xavier fires back with, "Your story is bullshit. We all know it is. So we're going to take these mutants whose memories you have tampered with, and we're going to bring them home." And Doom has this great moment of where he looks over his shoulder for a second before he's like, "Fine, take them," and then leaves.
Yeah. Just, like, just kind of realizes this fight isn't really worth it anymore.
Yeah. So, and as we talked about earlier, we now have the moment here where folks start to apologize to each other for what happened. Franklin realizes his powers are still broken, but he really wanted to do this because nobody would listen to him. You know, nobody understood what he was going through, and people wouldn't even talk to him about it. They would talk over him about it. And I do want to say this whole story, because we are going to actually be getting towards the end of it here. The entire overarching story here has been more of a, you know, a found family versus, you know, your birth family and what happens when those two conflict. But specifically what Franklin ends up talking about here, where he does kind of explain why he acted the way he did, especially where he says the line, "And now when I want to learn about myself, about mutants, about people like me, you don't even want to talk about it." You know, that is a very, very common experience in the LGBTQ community, you know. For some folks, if they want to talk to their family or parents about it, they're able to do so. But some, and, you know, I was one of them, like Franklin, they don't want to talk about it. You know, they will talk over it, make decisions for their child without actually considering what it is their child is trying to do or learn more about this other part of them that they're trying to understand. So there is a really big part of this story I kind of connect with, despite the fact that it is a little messy with how everything escalates so fast, which I think is just the nature of comic books, with superheroes especially. But I do like this through line with Franklin, where he is trying to understand his other family that he has in being born a mutant, and he's just not able to do so because his parents won't let him.
Yeah, I don't think it's messy, as you said. I think it's very by the numbers, but I think it's well-paced, or maybe Excalibur has really skewed my perception of
pacing. Is yeah. Yeah, it's
But I think it moved well. It's well paced. I just think it's a little by the number, and it makes a couple of character decisions that feel a bit, you know, contrived in order to fit the mold of the story it wants to tell. But I think it's fairly straightforward in the end.
Yeah, there's parts of it I really like. I think my issue with it, and I agree, it's by the numbers, but I don't think those numbers are necessarily bad.
No, yeah. It's well executed.
Yeah, I agree. I think my main problem with this, and what I just the stuff where I'm just like, I don't know about that, is mainly just the X-Men Fantastic Four conflict feels a little forced and requires everyone making some decisions that kind of undermine themselves.
Yeah.
And I think
go ahead.
I'm not, I think expecting characters to act 100% logically in a story is kind of silly, but in this case, it's like, okay, just stop jumping to conclusions for a little bit, please. Mm-hmm. Like, you're so close. Like, I know you're more reasonable than this.
Yeah, and I think that's what I mean by when I say messy. It's really the X-Men versus Fantastic Four aspect of it. Just everybody with the adults is really messy, because I agree there's a way to do this where it doesn't feel like people are doing conflict for the sake of having a conflict. And it wasn't quite hit here. There's logical steps that were skipped.
Yeah, there's a lot of people being led by their irrational beliefs that if they stopped for 5 minutes and thought about, it would be resolved instantaneously.
Yeah. I think everything with Doom is a treat. Doom, yes. I think... Yeah. I don't want to say save this, because that would imply the rest of it was bad, but I think this would be missing something greatly if he wasn't involved. Being kind of the unifier for the two sides helps quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
He's very charming.
Yes.
I didn't expect him to be as non-threatening as he was.
Yeah.
But it's not to the detriment of the story. I think it works well.
Mm-hmm. And I do say, you know, it's messy. It does have some problems, but I also come away from this going, I had fun. This was still great. You know? It's a solid, like, B, I think, for me. Maybe like a B minus, but I still had fun with it.
Yeah. Do we want to go through the epilogue before?
Yeah. I think we should.
I think that would be important.
Yeah, we got a little bit left here. But yeah, so we get a data page here about the gates, talk about how convenient they are, and then we kind of see it because Franklin's able to just part-time on both Krakoa and the Fantastic Four.
Yes, and we do have an interesting little tidbit here where, yeah, Franklin's powers are still decreasing, but when he's on Krakoa, they decrease slower than normal. So there's something there that's working for him in his favor. But
you gotta give him something for all his trouble.
Yes, this is true, besides another home. But he realizes he's late for dinner, and he needs to run home. And coincidentally, Xavier and Magneto also really want to go talk to Reed. But before we get there, back at the home of the Fantastic Four, we have our two best friends, Valeria and Uncle Doom, discussing with each other as Val did figure out that the suit that Uncle Doom made for Franklin was actually siphoning his power just a little bit off at the side. And she kind of wants to know why he's doing that.
Yeah. Doom's trying to do it to make himself stronger. Because-
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because as he sees it, mutants are, he doesn't quite say aberration, but that's what he's leaning towards. And he feels that he and Val are the true evolution of humanity here. Which,
yeah.
Val fires back, you know, hey, maybe like start working on acceptance as a stage of grief, and then we'll do okay.
Yeah. Little dinner's happy. We got Xavier and Magneto over to just have dinner with the Fantastic Four. Everything's all good. Having a good night.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely nothing dramatic's going to happen.
Nope, not at all.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially as Xavier and Magneto go to talk to Reed in his lab, and Magneto just grabs one of the flying drones around the room and holds it with his powers as Xavier removes his helmet, dives into Reed's mind, and removes his ability to ever remake the X-gene hiding device that he made at the beginning of this little mini series here.
Yeah, so he kind of talks about the reason for doing this as well, where he's just like, yeah, that thing, I know you weren't using it for it, but you can just erase the mutant gene with that. And we're not okay with that. So that knowledge is gone. Don't do it anymore. And we're not going to erase your knowledge that this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're gonna know this happened to you.
In nothing less than an absolute power move, Xavier's like, I want you to remember this because this isn't a game for us. We're here for survival. So you are going to remember this entire conversation.
Yeah, I like how this is a neat little callback to what Doom mentioned about Reed tossing and turning in his sleep because he couldn't like figure out a missing thing. And now he has a thing to toss and turn in his sleep over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, After this, we get a neat little data page about the Codex, which is the device he used to do this with. And it just kind of tells it about like what it does and like how it works and whatnot. And then we get another data page where stuff's missing.
I really like this.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool thing. Even if it does waste three pages,
yeah.
I think it's really neat.
It is a highly effective use of data pages. I give this one a very much an A+.
Yes.
It's kind of House of Leaves-ish to me. It works really well.
Yeah, so the second data page here is just like the first one, but with like missing words. The drawing of the codex is like erased a little bit. Even the gene stuff is kind of missing, and the third one is just like the entry number, and then just a blank page.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's a good way to show exactly like what happened to Reed here, and also just like a way to not like have this end off on just like this real happy note. Like it's. Things are a little bit amiss still.
Mm-hmm. Things mm-hmm. are different.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. So nice little story. I really did enjoy it. I think, you know, getting to see the Fantastic Four getting out of our comfort zone a bit worked really well. I know Doom was a highlight, as we already mentioned.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Doom, I think, really just kind of brought this whole thing together. And that's really, I think, what Doom should be as a character. And I really liked how he was used here. I like the stuff with Franklin and Kate a lot. I like the stuff with Franklin and Val a lot. There was a lot to like here.
Mm-hmm. I also like how it broadens the Marvel Universe just a bit more. We get to see what others are seeing or thinking of the mutants, you know. Up until now, we've gotten some data pages, maybe a character shows up here or there, but here's one of our first looks at, hey, what does the world outside of this think of them? You know, we have the Fantastic Four, but we also have Doom and his view on it as a world leader.
So,
yeah, I still think it's a little shallow for me, like the way the mutants are being challenged. But, you know, I'll give some credit to them.
Yeah. We, in a couple of weeks, a couple of episodes from now, we won't get into it right at this point, but we'll talk about what ends up happening to Franklin, because it doesn't happen in the X-Men comics, and it's not great.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. It is questionable at best.
Yeah, this ended up being like a big, like, wait, really moment. So we'll get into that a little bit later. Probably after Empire.
Yeah, okay. I was curious about when you wanted to bring that up. But yeah, we'll wait until after Empire to talk about that and the future of where Franklin is at the moment here.
Yeah.
So, but I also did want to say I really like this ending stinger here, you know, with Xavier and Reed. Because, yes, the game has changed. But also, you now have the open question of, well, what is Reed going to do following this? You know, he was already pretty hesitant on Krakoa and had already been able to make this thing that could hide the X gene. And he was now just directly threatened by two of the leaders of Krakoa here to keep quiet. And Reed doesn't feel like the kind of guy who would do that.
Yeah, and this is a very threatening situation. He's in his lab, in his home, with some people he invited over to dinner, and they come in and just mind wipe him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can imagine Reed probably not taking this too well, so we'll see where it ends up going. But, yeah, that's our little bonus episode. What do we got for next time?
Let me take a
look. Sergio probably knows.
I do.
All right, Sergio, what is up next?
Up next, we are reading through New Mutants number 8, Marauders number 9, and Cable number 1.
Oh!
Which I know because I read those issues thinking that was the next episode we were going to record, and then yesterday went into the call expecting to talk about those issues. And it's a good thing I asked which one we were going to begin with. Because I quickly realized that wasn't the next episode we were recording.
Yeah, it was a very confusing statement. It's just like, yeah, probably number one, right? I was like, wait a minute.
Hang on a second.
Yeah. Like,
God.
Yeah. Good times.
You know, it's been a very busy week.
Yeah.
This is a bonus episode that wasn't listed on our schedule, and that's the one I referenced like super quickly right before the recording. You know, I just had enough time to read through like a set of issues. So I just looked at the schedule, read what was on there, did not think about it for a second.
It is a very understandable mistake, and it's also a very funny one. So I'm glad it happened personally.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little funny.
So, but hey, you know what? We got Dr. Doom out of it, which I think is a blessing in itself.
Yeah. So yeah, we will we'll be back to record the next set of we'll be back to talk about the next set of issues in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, with Cable number one, our brand new number one that's going to be starting as an ongoing. So very excited to jump back into that one because I don't remember a lot about Cable. this series of issues here. So I'm excited to see him.
I don't think he does either.
Oh, okay, good. Maybe.
That's yeah. Let's go.
we'll go with that. You know, this is the bonus episode vibes, and that's what we're here for.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. Well, thank you for joining us in this extra little episode where we talk about the Fantastic Four and the X-Men. If you enjoyed your time here, it would be great if you could leave us a review on your podcasting app of choice, because that helps us get out to others who could listen to this and join in reading this wonderful Krakoa era of comic books that we're in. If you have any questions, comments, or your thoughts on Dr. Doom, you can go ahead and send us an email at studyofx.com, at studyofx@gmail.com. And we might read it on the air here. If you are looking for this podcast on any social media, we do have it on X, also known as Twitter, and also on Tumblr at Study of X. And if you are looking for me, you can find me on X and on Blue Sky under Sonics, which is S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S, although I am more active on Blue Sky. But I do check my Twitter every now and again. And Sergio, if they were looking for you to give you more wonderful Dr. Doom quotes, where can they find you?
Yeah, people are happy to DM me. I'm happy to receive DMs on Twitter or Blue Sky as well at Fireblend, F-I-R-E-B-L-E-N-D.
Awesome. And Tim, if they are looking for you and want to book a flight to Doom Island, where can they find you to inquire about that?
Well, I can't tell you, and I'm also not going to tell you how to get to Doom Island, but what I can ask you and plead with you is to please do not stab that Doom bot if you arrive on Doom Island. Do me a favor.
Okay, can I maybe do it the day after?
No, don't stab that Doom bot.
Okay, I will consider this piece of advice. I don't know if I'll follow it, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay, that's all I can ask.
Okay, good. Well, until next time, and until we figure out if we're going to stab these Doom bots or not. Later, mutants.
Bye.
See ya.